ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Monday night travel on Nightlife.
Australia's Tiwi Islands are about 80 kilometres north of Darwin. They've got a thriving Aboriginal arts culture, secluded fishing lodges, and a passion for football. So the Tiwi Islands do promise a holiday like no other. It's a unique part of Australia, and not too many tourists get up there, but the islands are a very rewarding destination for off-the-beaten-track intrepid travellers. The islands are renowned for excellent fishing opportunities, as well as, of course, the thriving Indigenous culture. Travel writer and editor of Traveloscopy.com, Roderick Guymy, has just visited the islands, and he joins us to report. Rod, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Great to be back, Phil.
Look, the Tiwi Islands are not on everybody's must-see list, should they be?
Well, you know, it's a very different location. You've already said that they're pretty unique, and that's true. It's not Bali, and it's not Phuket. And, I mean, looking at, you know, one of the biggest islands in Australia, second to Tasmania, with a population of 1,000 people. So, and, you know, the two islands together, Bathurst and Melbourne, really only looking at, you know, 2,500 people.
Oh, is that all?
It is very sparse. So there's not a lot going on. So it's a real remote, I think in tourism parlance, you'd call it a barefoot location. Mm-hmm. So if that kind of thing appeals to you, yeah, why not?
Mm. Tell me about the big attractions.
There aren't terribly many big attractions. Exactly, Phil, isn't it like a big banana or a big prawn or anything? We've got, the thing that I think brings people to Tiwi Islands in general, and probably Bathurst Island in particular, where the port of Warramyanga, and I've been practicing that all afternoon, is the history and the Aboriginal culture, particularly the art. So, I mean, our tour, I did a day tour from Darwin, and it was focused mainly on just having a bit of a walk around town, having a look at the excellent little museum they've got. You know what a nerd I am for folk museums, and they have a very good one there. And we visited the Art Centre, which is where you can indulge yourself in a little bit of Indigenous art and come away with a very personalised souvenir. So that's kind of the main thing. Now, you did mention fishing. Fishing is a little bit more exclusive. If you want to do that, tourism generally, you don't sort of just turn up. You know, you've really got to prepare. And you may find that you need to get a permit, which is probably part and parcel with a ferry ticket, which leaves from Darwin's Cullen Bay, which everybody knows.
Hey, yeah. How do you get there? Maybe we should talk about that. How do you get there?
Well, if you're going on one of these exclusive fishing charters, you will fly in a light plane.
Right.
15 years ago, I arrived as part of an across-the-top small ship adventure expedition cruise, which started in Cairns and finished in Darwin. So we'd visited all the little places across the top end. But the most common for tourists generally is the ferry, which leaves from Darwin. It's 2.5 hours across the Beagle Channel, the Beagle Strait. And you land at the little port town of Warramyanga, which is about as bustling as the Tiwi Islands get. You stop there at a little port. There's a fairly new jetty that's been built there to accommodate the ferries, which are run, I should point out, by the same company that runs the ferries to Rottnest Island in West Australia, and also Kangaroo Island, that SeaLink group in Adelaide. So it's a pretty schmick operation in terms of the actual vessels themselves, so that's not a concern. Now,
how many people are on the ferry? Not that many.
Well, it was pretty full, but I'm thinking probably if you packed the thing out, you'd probably get maybe 200-something people on it. There's no room for, you know, it's not one that takes cars or anything like that. That can be arranged, but it's by a separate vessel. So this one's just taking people in there shopping. So, and that's, as I say, 2.5 hours there and back. Now, the tours are organised by SeaLink themselves, and also I think AAT Kings, another very popular, well-known brand, also organises tours, and everybody goes across on the ferry. Now, you're met by a guide. My guide was the vivacious Vivian. Hi, Vivian, how are you? And we were supposed to go around on a little minibus, but really we ended up just walking, and everything's sort of within a easy walk from the port. and that was it. So, you know, we walked to the museum, walked to the art centre, I did a little bit of an excursion downtown because I wanted to send Mum a postcard. So I had to go and find the post office, which was shut and then open and then shut. So I mainly got that away. So that's the thing. But Tourism General is very low-key and very rudimentary. So
Can you stay there on the island if you wanted to?
Look, yes, you can. I did see a guest house at the port at Warramyunga, and also getting back to one of these exclusive type fishing expeditions, which are going to be pretty pricey, and you'll fly in by light plane, as I mentioned, and then you'll get four-wheel drive across to the other side, the westernmost coasts line of Bathurst Island, which is the westernmost of the two, Bathurst being on the left and Melville being on the right, if you're looking north. And you stay in a fishing lodge there, that the Tiwi Island Retreat, again called a Barefoot Lodge. I hasten to point out that I didn't visit the lodge, but I know that it exists. And if you're going there to do some, you could do pelagic fishing, like open ocean for billfish and sailfish, or you can fish the estuaries and the coast for the famous barramundi or any of the other species up there, like snapper and cod and fingermark and all that kind of stuff. So, the fishing anywhere across the top end from Broome, because I arrived in Darwin having sailed from Broome. We'll talk about that another time. And the fishing is just amazing. I quip once upon a time that the fish are so keen you have to bait your hook behind a tree, you know. So if that's the thing. I mean, fisher people who know will know that the top end is just amazing for fishing all the way across. So there's that. And that fishing lodge on the western shore, Tiwi Island Retreat, is available for that. But and I did say that there's a guest house at the port, and that's pretty much it as far as that goes.
Okay. So you had a guide who basically took you around. So the way to do it would be to take the ferry over, have a look around for the day and then go back, would it?
Well, yes, it's a guided tour.
Unless you did stay and do a fishing trip, as you say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, again, if you're doing the fishing trip, you won't be in the port town. You'll be over on the lodge.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, we were guided to, as I say, the museum. Now, I met fortuitously met Sister Anne Gardner, who was the Senior Australian of the Year in 2017, and she's a bit of a local legend. She's the same age as my mum, God bless her, 93 this year she'll be, and she came from Gundagai, and she was a teacher and an advocate for Tiwi Island. She's been, you know, she went off to do other things, but she's always ended up back in the Tiwi Island. So she whizzes around on a little electric scooter, having a great time, and everyone holds her in the highest of regard. God bless her.
There's some pretty interesting World War II history on the islands too, isn't there?
Well, there is, and that's very well documented in that museum that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But followers of Australian World War II Pacific Theatre history will know that the father on Father McGrath at the Sacred Heart Mission was the first, who was also a coast watcher, and we talked about coast watchers elsewhere. He was the first to spot the 188 aircraft that were flying from Timor, land base in Timor.
For the attack on Darwin.
Yes, and he radioed to headquarters, and in shades of Pearl Harbor, he says, a large formation of aircraft coming your way. They seem to be wearing meatballs. And he says, the message was received at headquarters back in Darwin. They go, that'll be the P-40s coming from Java. Oh, no, it wasn't.
Mm.
So, unfortunately, as historians will know, that message was dismissed and the Japanese were afforded complete and utter surprise.
That's right.
When they came to Darwin, yes.
One of the air crew, a Sergeant Hajime Toyoshima, was taken prisoner when his Zero crashed on Bathurst Island coming back after the Darwin raid.
Yeah, now that's a great story too. Now, Toshima was a sergeant and flying a Zero, and he was part of the 188 planes that were flying from, him in particular came from the Hiryu, the Japanese aircraft carrier, which took part in all of those activities in the early part of World War II. The aircraft nerds like myself will know that the Zero, while it was a very capable and superior aircraft in the early part of the war, had a number of shortcomings, one of which was it didn't have any armour and it didn't have self-sealing fuel tanks. So he took an unlucky bullet, some say to a fuel tank, some say to an oil cooler. Either way, his plane either ran out of fuel or his engine seized over Melville Island and he crash-landed in the swamp. The plane was more or less in one piece and was very significant in that it was the first sort of really intact Zero that was captured by the Allies, apart from the one that was captured in Alaska. And he was captured by the Melville Islanders, who were part of an Australian Northern Reconnaissance Force, and they patrolled all the coastlines around Bathurst Island and Melville Island, Coburg Peninsula, all across Arnhem Land, Groote Island as well. And they were very important in rescuing, identifying Allied servicemen and airmen who crashed, and also identifying the Japanese. And, of course, that got a lot busier as time went on, because Darwin and Northern Territory got something like 90 air raids in all after that. So that was an interesting thing. And he went on to Cowra and took part
in the Cowra breakout.
Yeah, he was the one who blew the bugle, in fact.
Oh. So he died in that.
He died, unfortunately, 24 years old, yeah. So sadly, but that was the way of things in those days.
Of course, the Tiwi Islanders love Aussie rules football and also extremely good at it.
They are. Even for a population, smaller than most country towns, they do shoot or hit way above their weight in terms of producing excellent footballers. I'm a bit unlucky that I didn't get to see the match. I walked past the footy ground a couple of times, because when I was on my way over on the ferry, there was a very rambunctious group of youngsters on their way to play an invitation match against the Tiwi Islanders. And I saw them again on the way back, and apparently they won by all accounts. And, they love the Aussie rules, and probably, I think, they're playing in barefoot and playing in pouring rain. And
they've produced some absolute champs. I mean, particularly the Rioli family, of course. Morris and Cyril Rioli and others too. They've been absolute champs from the Tiwi Islands.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Look, it does sound like an interesting trip, I must say. If you were in Darwin and you wanted to have a day out, this would be a good thing to do.
Look, it would. And I think, just reiterating what we talked about earlier on, you would need to have a passion for the Aboriginal culture and the particularly the art. Now, the art is quite spectacular, as any follower of Aboriginal art will know. And it has its own unique character, as the various lands do have. I guess that Europeans were first exposed to the culture and the art as far back as the 17th century, very early 17th century. It's generally agreed that Abel Tasman was the first one to sight the islands, but of course they were mapped and charted by Philip Parker King, who was a much unsung hero of Australian early mapping and cartography. We tend to think of the Flinders and the Cooks and so forth, but Philip Parker King is really a hero of the top end. Four times he went around Australia, all the way around. He thought the place was good for a settlement. He said, oh, you guys need to come up here and plant a flag and whatnot. And that first European settlement was, in fact, on Melville Island. Back in about 1824, something like that. Okay. Unfortunately, it didn't go very well for a number of reasons. And it was also part of that colonisation attempt, which included the Coburg Peninsula. And historians will know that Port Essington, Victoria, was also part of that same effort,
that's right.
All of which failed spectacularly.
It did. It did. Rod, it's an intriguing part of Australia, and for those on the lap or otherwise, it might be a very nice day out indeed.
Indeed.
Great to talk with you.
Always a pleasure, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.